Xi Jinping not doing anything particularly new, but being very opportunistic.
Is the Chinese president taking advantage of the U.S. leadership change? It's Friday, January 20th, and this is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Be a part of our program. Log on now to our VOA Asia Facebook page. Also ahead, will the One China policy lessen freedoms in Hong Kong? China raises threat level against Taiwan. A Vietnamese rapper is one of Obama's presidential highlights. All on today's VOA Asia. Chinese President Xi Jinping at the United Nations in Geneva on Wednesday held out the promise of multilateral cooperation on matters such as nuclear disarmament, terrorism, and climate change, a day after his speech in defense of globalization at the World Economic Forum in Davos. Just 2 days before President-elect Donald Trump was to be inaugurated, Mr. Xi said, in an age of interdependence, it is our responsibility to build up a community of shared future for mankind. He said China would continue to work with the international community towards a better future. RAND Corporation analyst Andrew Scoble told VOA's Victor Beatty, while such language is nothing new, it may reflect a subtle change to the global leadership of the United States as Mr. Trump takes office.
Given the transition that's taking place in U.S. politics from one administration to another, he seems to be trying to take advantage of a void or a gap. In that sense, he's trying to claim the mantle of leadership in the world at Geneva. It is Xi Jinping not doing anything particularly new, but being very opportunistic, claim the limelight and position himself and China for a greater leadership role in world affairs.
Mr. Xi also met on the sidelines in Geneva with the new UN Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, who said that he was very reassured to see that China is assuming a clear leadership in multilateralism in today's world. Obviously, China views itself differently than it did even just 10 years ago.
China's been rethinking multilateralism for a number of years. So this is a gradual shift in Chinese thinking of style of its diplomacy, more greater comfort in multilateral settings such as the UN. It is a discernible trend, and with the question marks that surround what exactly the policies of the Trump administration will be, this is a clear play by the Chinese to stake out a stronger, more prominent leadership position.
While Andrew Scoble suspects the fiery rhetoric of Mr. Trump will moderate over time, he said China remains uncertain of the trajectory of the future U.S.-China relations. Anki Panda, co-editor of the Asia-Pacific current events publication The Diplomat, said China's policies don't often match its globalization rhetoric.
There's a long laundry list of tariff and non-tariff barriers that China has undertaken on trade. So when Xi Jinping goes to Davos and he tells the world that free trade is good, globalization is good, China will stand up for this, I think we should take this with a grain of salt. You know, you can point to China's cultivation of new multilateral banking institutions, including the BRICS New Development Bank and the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank. You can look at a very recent Chinese white paper on Asia-Pacific security. You know, you'll note that many of these institutions and statements that China has made are more focused on the Asia-Pacific region more broadly. So I'd say when it comes to multilateralism, interest in global governance, yes, China is interested in preserving the Paris Accord, and yes, China is interested in playing a greater role in UN peacekeeping operations, for example. But more specifically, I'd say that its rulemaking aspirations are, for the moment, still limited to the Asia-Pacific region.
Ankit, I want to pick up on a theme that seems to have played in Mr. Xi's remarks. Quote, nuclear weapons should be completely prohibited and destroyed over time. Is this a new policy?
I believe it's not a new policy on the part of China. China has broadly supported the non-proliferation regime and supported disarmament. Obviously, here again, China's record is a little bit more checkered. There's evidence that China, for example, assisted Pakistan's nuclear breakout and may have conducted nuclear tests on behalf of Pakistan before ceding to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. But again, the fact that she would bring something like up at Davos again shows that China is interested in at least sounding like a responsible global power.
On Wednesday, the American Chamber of Commerce in China released its annual survey showing more than 80% of its 500 members felt less welcome and hold out little hope in China's promises to open its markets. These are among the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. South Korean court rejects Samsung executive arrest warrant request. Philippine police chief apologizes to South Korea in killing. Malaysia to offer reward for missing flight MH370. Activists call for Indonesia Zoo to release starving bears. Pakistan upbeat about U.S. ties under Trump, critics skeptical. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and also on our VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues as we welcome our listeners on VOA Asia Facebook and VOA Burmese. The government in Beijing has gone to the media in recent days to counter comments by U.S. President-elect Trump about the One China policy, and also recently on democracy and independence advocates in Hong Kong who attended seminars in Taiwan. VOA Asia's Steve Miller finds out more with RAND Corporation's Scott Harold, the Associate Director for the Center for Asia-Pacific Policy, on this complicated relationship between Hong Kong and Beijing.
The Chinese Communist Party's state-run People's Daily took aim at Hong Kong pro-democracy and independence advocates, saying that what the movements in Hong Kong and Taiwan have in common is a plan on destroying the country and vowed to curb it. But is there enough of an independence movement in Hong Kong to challenge Beijing, or is merely the persistent idea that one exists prompting Beijing's responses? Scott Harold, the Associate Director at the Center for Asia-Pacific Policy at the RAND Corporation.
In Hong Kong, there have been a small number of people who have talked about Hong Kong independence, but I think that Beijing has sought in an effort to try to undermine, undercut, and delegitimate Hong Kong's umbrella movement and its Occupy Central with Peace and Love movement by trying to tether them to the notion that these are a bunch of radical separatists who want some pie in the sky, independent Hong Kong that can never happen.
He says that the notion of an independent Hong Kong is a relatively new idea and not widely accepted, but has grown over the past few years.
And now there are people talking about it, so I think this is kind of in the way that ideas and identity change. This is something that's happening, and for that reason it's extremely alarming to Beijing. And the problem is Beijing has a real difficulty in ever seeing that its own actions have consequences.
Or they may even know that, but feel there's no other option but to respond that way and must adopt the toughest line possible. So, is the tactic working?
I think there's a few different ways to cut at this. One is to look at kind of the short-term or tactical status, and then another is to look at kind of the longer-term, what we might call the secular trend.
The secular trend focuses on deepening the sense of Hong Kong identity, and some who remember life before the 1997 handover feel that their way of life may be under attack with the arrival of those from mainland China.
But in the more specific tactical day-to-day, you know, who's winning that battle? I think undeniably, unfortunately, the PRC's approach has cowed a number of people who might have been wavering into being quiet.
Because Beijing can marshal the superior resources to achieve that outcome by waiting the opposition out. In 2047, the basic law that's been governing Hong Kong goes away. So can current events provide a glimpse of what Hong Kongers may see in a generation?
I'm not sure political scientists have any better record of predicting the future.
But Harold says that 30 years is a long time. He doesn't see China changing the way it addresses Hong Kong, but also the Hong Kong and China that we see today may not necessarily be the same ones we see in 2047. Steve Miller, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, South Korean media reports North Korea may be preparing for some sort of missile launch, coinciding with the presidential inauguration of Donald Trump. Trump said he would not let a North Korean intercontinental ballistic missile strike the United States. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. China flexed a military muscle and hit at Taiwan's foreign relations over the past month as warnings against closer ties with the United States, a longtime protector of self-rule on the island that Beijing considers its own. But so far, Beijing is keeping more extreme retaliation measures in reserve. In late December and again last week, a formation including the Liaoning aircraft carrier plied waters around Taiwan, which is 160 kilometers southeast of China. Last month, the African nation of Sao Tome and Principe severed two decades of formal relations with Taiwan to recognize China. And last week, Nigeria cut informal ties with Taiwan, saying it's not a country. Those moves were meant to warn Taiwan President Tsai Ing-wen against growing closer with the United States since her surprise phone call on December 2nd to U.S. President-elect Donald Trump, and in light of her trip to the Americas January 7th through the 14th. Joanna Lei, chief executive officer of the Changhua 21st Century think tank in Taiwan, says China has spared the more salient threats of the past in case Tsai cools toward the United States and seeks talks with Beijing.
International space was given to Taiwan on the basis of understanding that there is low tension across Taiwan Straits. Once that tension is increased, there is no denial that Taiwan's international space will be reduced, and that will be something Taiwan's government has to grapple with and has to have a reaction to.
Tsai, who has been in office since May, has frustrated China for her unwillingness to hold talks on grounds that both sides belong to one country. But she's kept her tone toward Beijing polite. Cohen Blau, executive director of the Washington-based pro-Taiwan advocacy group Formosan Association for Public Affairs, says Beijing is expected to avoid more drastic measures.
China must fear President-elect Trump because of Trump's unpredictability. They must feel they need to do something in response to recent signals from the Trump camp in support of Taiwan, but stopping short of conducting missile tests. So sailing the Liaoning aircraft carrier through the Taiwan Strait was probably the strongest signal they could think of given the circumstances. It's hard to imagine China going beyond that.
The warnings are seen as soft so far, and they have incited little sustained outrage or fear in Taiwan, but could escalate if Taiwan's president does anything new that offends China, according to Shane Lee, political scientist at Chungcheong Christian University in Taiwan.
She's not taking any chance, so that's why he's holding herself back. In her view, that's better not to really irritate China more. She's facing a lot of pressure from within the party and for the society in general.
You'll find much more on this ongoing story between China and Taiwan on our Facebook page at VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news alert from VOA Asia. A North Korean conscript shot and killed seven platoon members at a customs post along the country's northern border with China. The suspect was arrested and taken to Pyongyang. The suspect recently graduated high school and was reportedly bullied by superiors. Check out Steve Miller's Asia Minute for the latest each day on VOA Asia Facebook. A South Korean court on Thursday dismissed an arrest warrant request for the head of the Samsung Group in a case that could affect the impeachment trial of President Park Geun-hye.
E.J. Young, the vice president of Samsung Electronics Company, was held for 14 hours in a detention facility before the Seoul Central District Court ruled there was not enough evidence at this time to justify prosecutors' charges of bribery, embezzlement, and perjury. E.Q. Chul is a spokesman of the prosecutor's office.
법원의 구속영장 기각 결정은
He says the court's decision to reject the arrest warrant is very regrettable, but we will steadily continue the investigation by taking necessary measures. He is suspected of paying President Park's influential friend, Choi Soon-sil, $36 million in return for the president's help to secure the approval of a state-run pension fund for a 2015 merger of two Samsung affiliates. The court's decision on the Samsung case could be a setback for prosecutors in the presidential impeachment trial, which is also underway. Park stands accused of colluding with Choi Soon-sil and some of her closest aides to force Samsung and other powerful Korean conglomerates to donate more than $65 million to the two dubious foundations. Park has denied the charges. Kusei Wong is the editor of Korea Exposé, an online Korean news and opinion site, and says the Constitutional Court recently reminded Park's team that an impeachment inquiry does not use the same presumption of innocence standard as is used in a criminal trial.
There is very much presumption of guilt, so that is perhaps unfair to the president. But by refusing to really cooperate with his proceedings, the president and her defense team have really tested the patience of the Constitutional Court.
The Constitutional Court accelerated the impeachment proceedings this week. Two key aides to the president who have been implicated in the scandal have reportedly gone into hiding. Kusei Wong says in their absence, the Constitutional Court is allowing previous testimony or statements from witnesses made to the prosecutors in the course of their investigation.
It means that these witnesses need not be compelled to show up at the Constitutional Court to give new testimonies. The court would simply rely on past statements given to the prosecutors to make their ruling.
The judges on the Constitutional Court are reportedly anxious to conclude the proceedings and reach a verdict as soon as possible while they still have a strong chance to reach the six votes required for a ruling. The nine-member body will lose a judge at the end of January and then two more in March as their terms run out. Developing at this hour in Asia, Malaysia's prime minister called on Myanmar to stop all discrimination and attacks on Rohingya Muslims. The UN Human Rights Envoy to Myanmar also met with Myanmar de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi about troubled Rakhine State and allegations of wrongdoing by security forces. VOA Asia keeps you informed all day on Facebook at VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, as President Barack Obama prepares to leave office, the White House has released a video compilation of some of the most memorable moments in his presidency. And as VOA's Dave DeForest reports, it includes a meeting with Sue Boy, Vietnam's, quote, queen of hip-hop.
The president encountered 26-year-old Sue Boy at a town hall meeting with young people during his trip to Vietnam last year. Sue Boy told VOA Vietnamese she felt honored to be in the White House video and that the meeting was exciting.
Town hall. It means that everyone has a chance to talk with a top leader. And in this case, his audience was all young persons. I think this term is a new to most Vietnamese. I certainly raised my hand every time he offered a chance for questions. When he said that he would take one last question, I believe I had to be the one to ask it. Other young friends had already asked me about the economy and human trafficking, but no one had asked about actors, actresses, or the arts.
When Sue Boy introduced herself as a rapper, the president said,
Before I answer your question, why don't you give me a little rap? Let's see. Let's see what you got. Come on. Do you need like a little beat?
Yes, I do, actually.
No, go ahead. Come on.
She then belted out a rap number as the audience clapped along to the president's evident delight. The exchange between Obama and Suboy went viral on social media, and news organizations started calling her Vietnam's queen of hip-hop.
Tình hình một mình nhà lầu trên in dầu sang như vua chúa giật mình sự tình thiệt ra đen đúa. Mà đời vậy là hey, it's been a crazy day. Khi mà ta nhắm hai đôi mắt, su mái chèo chơi với mày. My name is Suboy, by the way.
Well, that was good. See there? That's pretty good. What were you just rapping? What was your verse there?
I was just talking about some people having a lot of money, having big houses, but actually, are they really happy?
Sudden fame has not changed Suboy's life, but it has energized her thinking about the role of youth in modern society.
Cuộc sống từng ngày và cả làm việc ở đây thì không có gì thay đổi, nhưng mà có một điều nó sẽ thay đổi mãi mãi, đó là cái suy nghĩ của Suboy.
My daily and working life do not change, but what does change is my way of thinking. The president answered my question with great sympathy. We can't just sit down or discuss these topics over and over again. We must take action right now. Making changes for youth in our society is the most important thing.
The White House video, less than 6 minutes long, gives glimpses of world leaders such as Myanmar's Aung San Suu Kyi and American celebrities such as actors Tom Hanks and Leonardo DiCaprio. But most of the president's farewell moments video features ordinary people's feelings about the nation's first African-American president.
Hey, it's been a crazy day. Khi mà ta nhắm hai đôi mắt, su mái chèo chơi với mày.
And thanks to my VOA colleague Dave DeForest and, of course, Suboy for giving us that beat out of today's program. We also thank all of our listeners who joined us streaming live on VOA Asia Facebook, also VOA Burmese. A big shout-out to all of you in Myanmar. Guess what? It's not the end of the week. We'll be back tomorrow with a special inauguration program with the VOA Asia team. Steve Miller, Ali Ogden will be here. And also our intern, Eli Zimmerman. Everybody's going to join in the fun. We want you to join us, too. Our director is Tracy Carter. Engineer, Aydin Utku. Managing editor, Diane Gao. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to check us out on Facebook at VOA Asia. And have a great day ahead.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Over the last 6 years, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad and his regime are responsible for the deaths of thousands of Syrians. Perhaps one of the most horrific means of slaughter employed by the regime has been its repeated use of chemical weapons. In a recent blog post, Acting Undersecretary of State for Arms Control and International Security, Thomas Countryman, called for the Syrian regime to be held to account. The United Nations Security Council, he said, needs to vote soon on a resolution to hold accountable individuals involved in the Syrian chemical weapons program. Following the brutal sarin gas attack on August 21, 2013, the United States worked with the international community to broker the framework for the elimination of the Syrian chemical weapons program. Under this framework, Syria committed to join the Chemical Weapons Convention and to fully eliminate its chemical weapons program. All told, the international community removed and destroyed over 1,200 metric tons of Syria's declared chemical weapons stockpile. An independent international panel established by the UN Security Council in 2015 concluded at the end of 2016 that Syrian Arab armed forces used chlorine barrel bombs on civilians in three separate attacks in Syria in 2014 and 2015. The panel also determined that the Islamic State used mustard gas in Moria in August 2015. As President Obama said, there are those who are trying to obfuscate the truth about what is happening in Syria. But the evidence that the Assad regime and Islamic State use chemical weapons is overwhelming. No person, group, or nation, said Undersecretary Countryman, should ever be allowed to use chemical weapons with impunity. Now it is time for the UN Security Council to act. The United States will defend the principles, laws, and norms laid out in the Chemical Weapons Convention. The Treasury Department recently announced sanctions designations for 18 senior Syrian regime officials in response to the international panel's findings. Announcing the sanctions, the White House condemned in the strongest possible terms the Syrian regime's use of chemical weapons. We have also been making concrete progress towards the goal of degrading and ultimately destroying the Islamic State and its chemical weapons capability in partnership with the Global Counter-ISIL Coalition. The U.S. is prepared to take further action to pursue accountability and promote the norm against chemical weapons, and we call on other members of the international community to do the same.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.